Now, we come to the second part of the discussion on planning in this chapter. We're very crucial and important. Here we talk about what is called as developing a good plan B. Why do we say plan B? The plan A is already decided. The plan A is the plan ideal for us, which we decide to work on. Most of us are ready to do the plan A, but that doesn't work all the time. So we need to keep an alternate plan B, and the alternate plan B is what we're talking about, developing a good plan B, having a solid plan B to be ready. Now this plan B can be in two different forms. One is we call this plan B in a certain context. Another one is what we call as contingency planning in a different context. One is a plan B which takes place when certain resources get changed, certain time frames get changed, certain new events keep happening, which are not two way out. But in contingency planning, what happens? A contingency takes place which nobody ever thought of. See, routine things do spring surprises some days. A very diligent employee may not come one day. That fellow's surprise. Now, I need to have a plan B for that day. But on a day, suddenly, out of the blue, there's a flood or a tsunami, or there could be an earthquake, act of God as you call it, or something so way out we never ever imagined. Suddenly there's a power outage and the entire factory has to stop. Nobody expected it. Now that is contingency. So two different types of plan B we are talking about. One is plan B, which happens wherein certain things we take for granted suddenly go haywire, but it can be quickly put into action as compared to contingency planning. So let's see what it is. Planning is a flexible process and needs alternate courses of action. The alternate courses of action may be needed during routine occasions and also during non-routine occasions. That's what I explained now. Routine occasions demand alternate plans, while non-routine occasions that occur suddenly and unannounced, for example, acts of God, require contingency plans, contingent. Fires, floods, tornadoes, earthquakes, acts of God that are often connected with contingency planning. For example, what if your main supplier suddenly goes bankrupt? Now this comes under plan B on the left hand side, which I showed in the earlier slide. You could think of another supplier quickly. This may not be so disruptive. Or your entire sales force gets food poisoning at the annual sales conference. God forbid. Imagine. So when this happens, it's a big thing which you would have expected. You may catch hold of the caterer, you may do something, you may take some action, but the damage is already done. Are you having a plan for this? Could you preempt this by seeing that you hold the annual sales conference in a better place where the food is not suspect of getting poison? Or your payroll clerk calls in sick on the payroll day. It happens in some places, you know. Your paycheck is supposed to be coming in today, credit to your account, and it's not come for today and for tomorrow and day after, and you come to know that the payroll check, who's centralizing everything with himself, is suddenly fallen ill. Can an organization afford to work that way? No. Do I have an alternative payroll clerk who can take up the job? So these are instances of plan B. These things can cause confusion and disorder if you haven't prepared for them properly. Contingency planning is a key part of this preparation. And as you can see, contingency planning is not just about major disasters, but also about unprecedented events which are beyond your control. Small changes happen, small disappointments do happen, but we can make do it. But major disappointments, disappointments which is to do with trust, imagine. A trustworthy senior manager, been working in the company for a long period of time, one fine morning puts in his papers. You think everything is hunky-dory in the relationship between him and the company. And today we are coming across so many instances. Every day we read in the papers. When that thing comes, it's a big shock and the management is left wonderstruck because that intelligence did not come to them. Nobody told them. It came out of the blue. Even that comes under contingency planning. Do I have an alternative CEO when the present CEO has suddenly quit out of the blue, unannounced, contingency? Okay. As you can see, contingency planning is not just about major disasters, but also about unprecedented events. Okay. On a smaller scale, it's about preparing for the events such as loss of data, people, customers and suppliers, and other disruptive unknowns. That's why it's important to make contingency planning a normal part of the way your business works. Be prepared for the worst. Be prepared for the worst. Stretch your imagination and think of the most awful scenario that could happen. An IT major, an IT company of a very major dimension, for example, has to think about what would happen on that fateful day when all the data is lost. Of course, they do have what is called as business continuity plan. I'm going to discuss it now. So, can I think of the worst case scenario, the unimaginable scenario, whose chances are very remote to happen? If you're in a place like Japan, for example, we know earthquakes are very common. But a place which does not have a history of earthquake at all, can you think of an earthquake, the likelihood of an earthquake happening, and the impact of that on your business, and prepare for it? Important. This may look very far-fetched, but it's very important, especially when you're globally dependent. We had floods in Mumbai some years back, and we have these godowns in a place called, a little away from the city, which is called as Bhiwandi. I know one pharmaceutical company which had a business continuity plan. Even after the floods were receding 2 days, everything was disrupted. This company was able to have a contingency plan wherein they were able to ship vital drugs so that it was an uninterrupted supply to the hospitals. More about it later, right? To alleviate, to bring down the effects of an unforeseen event that occurs and take charge, organizations create business continuity plan, also called as BCP. Many of you must be knowing about it. It was unheard of 10-15 years back. A business continuity plan is a roadmap for continuing operations under unexpected adverse conditions. Whatever happens, the show must go on. That's business continuity plan. So businesses have to look at it as an investment, not as a cost. Imagine the IT company example which I gave you. A huge IT company with a huge volume of data that's being processed. Volume of data which is almost universal in nature. Now they need to have a parallel processing unit somewhere in the world, offshore somewhere, which is going on parallel processing. The data that this process here on real-time basis also gets stored there in a huge mega server, if I can use a term. So that if something happens here, then that comes to the rescue. Obviously, you have to set up an infrastructure there that involves resources, money, maybe manpower, that may not be used all the time. It may be idle for a long period of time, for years together. The company may say that it's a waste. Why do it? And the chances of this happening is very less, so let's not go for contingency planning. What's the point in putting millions of dollars and putting it somewhere where it is not being used? It's like the fire hydrant, you know, a simple example. We have the fire hydrant in many buildings, so that in the eventuality of a fire, we can use it. I know buildings which do not follow safety norms, and they say the possibility of a fire is very, very remote. It cannot happen. We live with a lot of hope, you know, things may not happen. But events, they dash our hopes. And one fine morning, unfortunately, God forbid, a fire takes place in a particular floor and there is no fire hydrant around. Penny wise, pound foolish. You thought it will never happen, but things happen even beyond your hopes. So businesses today have to really consciously plan to maintain business continuity. Hence, we have BCP. It is also called as business continuity and resiliency planning. Resiliency means bouncing back. Suddenly there's a tsunami, suddenly something happens, quickly you bounce back. Look at what happened to Mumbai. 26/11, we had the terrorist attack. Within few days, those of you who are living in Mumbai, I'm sure you'll know how quickly we bounce back. The resiliency of the city is pretty fast. There is something, some BCP, BCRP among the citizens of this place. We quickly bounce back, we are resilient and we come back. Just giving an example, social example. Do organizations also have the capacity to bounce back into action and business as usual? They need to do it, they need to plan it. It doesn't happen by accident, right? Any event that could impact operations is included, such as supply chain interruption, loss of or damage to critical infrastructure, major machinery or computing networks resource. As such, risk management must be incorporated as a part of BCP. We know about risk management, chemical plants, IT centers, everybody has got what is called as a risk mitigation program, so that they know that certain parts of the working are prone to shutdowns, breakdowns, etc., inadvertently. So there's a separate branch of study which is risk management. People from the insurance field know about it, because insurance is all about risk managers and how the premium which is to be paid by the organizations are fixed based on the risk levels. Okay, so business continuity management is standardized, and the standard provides a best practice of framework to minimize disruption during unexpected events that could otherwise bring the business to a standstill. There's a certain framework which I'll be discussing now, a certain set of steps we need to take to ensure that a BCP is put in place, certain processes which we need to create, a cycle, right? The document gives you a practical plan to deal with the most eventualities, from extreme weather conditions to terrorism to IT system failure to staff attrition, mass attrition. Okay, now here it is. The business continuity plan, a BCP approach. It starts with an analysis of what could go wrong, goes to the design of a solution, and then it goes to the implementation of what needs to be done now, even when the going is good, and then testing and acceptance, and then finally maintenance. This forms business continuity planning life cycle. It's a cyclical thing, and this needs to be kept running. Very important. Now let's understand each of these steps. Now comes the analysis. The business impact analysis, BIA as it is called, differentiates critical, urgent, and non-critical, non-urgent organization functions and activities. First and foremost, in this analysis, we demarcate what is urgent basis and what is non-urgent basis. List is made. Okay, critical functions are those which where disruption is regarded as unacceptable. Certain critical functions cannot stop. There I need to be focused. It's worth it putting in good amount of investment, because if that stops, business stops, credibility of the business stops, brand dilutes. So there I cannot afford to cut corners. I cannot be economical. I cannot do thriftiness. I have to be very clear that there an investment is worth it. It's very, very important, right? Next comes solution design. The solution design phase identifies the most cost-effective disaster recovery solution that meets two main requirements from the impact analysis stages. I need to know two things. One is, I have to take charge of what has gone wrong. Second is, I must quickly come back to normal and business as usual. These two things, factors have to be taken into account. One is recovery. The second one is resilience into action. So I need to come out with a solution design, various alternatives. I must see that which of these is the best for us to implement and keep things ready, right? The third one is implementation. The implementation phase involves policy changes. Policy in terms of what? We need to invest in this particular BCP facility installation. Okay? And we need to ensure that this is a part of our investment. Materials acquisitions, staffing and testing. So we need to have people at the top, middle and bottom who think in terms of BCP. And that needs to be properly implemented into action. A thing that may not be operational at all for months and years together, but that needs to be in place. They must be regularly maintained, regularly well oiled. We never know when it will happen, right? Testing. The purpose of testing is to achieve organization acceptance that the solution satisfies the recovery requirements. Plans may fail to meet expectations due to insufficient or inaccurate recovery requirements, solution design flaws, or solution implementation errors. So after I set up a particular system, I need to test it. So if I test it, I'll come to know where are the bugs, where are the flaws, and I can plug them. So I need to run it once. If you notice in chemical plants, we have what is called as a fire drill. What is done by the utilities, the maintenance department is the safety people. One fine morning, somewhere in the unannounced, they will suddenly create a fire alarm in the whole chemical plant. And they'll see whether people who have been trained into safety measures, whether they really follow it. And they'll be watching. And after watching, they'll audit. The fire drill may last for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour. And they will simulate certain alarm conditions as if there's a fire. Now, during that time, they will observe departments, sections, certain parts of the plant. Are they really following what they have been trained into? And if they're not followed, they are pulled up and they are re-educated and told about this. Fire drills are very interesting. I've been a witness to many of these fire drills during my career in engineering industry. As an engineer, when I used to go to certain chemical plants, I happened to go to one company outside Mumbai, a chemical plant, and the day I went there as a client, there was a fire drill. And I was quite taken aback. I said, hey, there's a fire. I really thought there was a fire. And the department where I was actually sitting and talking to the concerned senior manager, you know, then he told us what needs to be done. So we had to, you know, lie down on the floor and do what was told to be done. And believe it or not, till the fire drill got over, I did not know that it was a fire drill. And then everybody came out and those people come, they give a clearance. And then they said it was a fire drill. The first time I saw what's a fire drill. It lasted for around 15 minutes or so. Now, these are things that educate us to tell us, be prepared all the time. We never know what's coming. Right? In fact, most of the accidents that happen in industry are happening because of negligence, A, and also not complying with the training that you've gone through. A systematic approach towards doing something always helps you to be safe. Take anything. And everywhere we have got this training, we don't follow the training. We take shortcuts. And we take a shortcut on regular things. So when a contingency comes, imagine what happens to you and me. We get more than panic. And sometimes we lose our life and limb as well. Okay. So friends, let's take it further. Maintenance, the last part of it. Biannual. So maybe once in twice in a year or annual maintenance cycle, wherein we go and check whether everything is working properly. Maintenance of a BCP manual is broken down into three periodic activities. We create what is called as a BCP manual, a written document, which tells you steps by step what needs to be done. So there are three things that are talked about. Confirmation of information in the manual, rollout to the staff for awareness and specific training for critical individuals. People are planning in a chemical plant, for example, the ones who are in the most crucial plants, which are prone to fire, which are prone to poisonous gases, hazard areas, those are the critical people. Those critical people and the non-critical people both are given information what needs to be done. That's a part of the BCP manual, first one. Second is testing and verification of technical solutions established for recovery operations. If this thing happens, what do we need to do? Test it. Verified, and then make them realize that when it happened, this is what you're supposed to do. And the last one is testing and verification of organization recovery process. What the concerned department needs to do when the contingency takes place, what the organization needs to do when the contingency takes place. These three parts are a part of the BCP manual. Now, here is a process which is followed in planning. I'm going over to the third part of the planning discussion, which is to do with a very important process called Management by Objectives, MBO, Management by Objectives. In chapter number 2, where I talked about the history of management, I did make a mention about Peter Drucker and the MBO process. The same MBO process is shown in the form of a block diagram out here. The process of management by objectives. What is objective? Objective point towards the purpose and the direction of a goal. A very systematic approach which flows from top to bottom. Defining organization objectives very clearly, articulating them in words, simple words so that everybody understands from the top management right down to the operational person. Next, defining SMART goals of every section. every section needs to define its specific, measurable, attainable, realistic and time-bound goals. Then fixing KRA, key result areas, on priority basis, for example, profitability, marketing, market standing, innovation, etc. KRA are the non-negotiables which are supposed to fulfill, failing which you will be facing the music and the appraisal. So KRA are the must-dos of your job, right? Setting subordinate objectives and targets. I said that subordinate objective and target on a one-to-one basis, not as a group. And these targets include two things which is not mentioned here: individual goals and organization goals of the subordinate. Every individual has to map what are his individual goals and what are his organization goals. And both are clear-cut and articulated, and one needs to draw a connection between individual and organization goals. For example, my individual goal must be to buy a apartment. And the organization goals of my job must be that I need to fulfill a certain target in a certain region or developing a new business. Are they related? The relationship is clearly understood by the executive. Because when there's a understanding between my individual goals and my organization goals, the integration takes place very well, so that there's a cross motivation to do both. The beauty about MBO is the integration of individual and organization goals. It's not mentioned here, but that's what I wanted to share with you. Then we match resources with the objectives and allocating and utilizing the resource properly. Periodic review meetings for accomplishment and objectives. There's periodic appraisal takes place one-to-one informally. Imagine you getting a feedback every day, every week by the boss, and both of them are having a give and take. It's not about me doing a top-down appraisal on you. Bottom-up also takes place. How does it take place? That if I'm the subordinate, you're the boss, and when I'm talking to you, your goals are attached to my goals. So both of us have to understand where we are traveling. So it's a cross feedback given on both sides. It's an involvement of sorts. Trust develops. There's a lot of give and take. Okay. Then we talk about appraisal of activities, subordinates' performance against the specified standards. And finally, the reappraisal of objectives, reviewing the objectives according to the changing situation. And this whole thing becomes a cyclical process. It goes back to one and again comes back in this order. So that's MBO. And now some of the important features of MBO and the advantages is given here. One is motivation. Employees feel motivated because they are involved in the process of goal setting themselves. It's not that somebody on the top sets a goal and they have to simply execute it. They become engaged into the goal setting because they become a part of it. And that increases the employee empowerment. They start feeling nice about it. They start taking decisions and they are also allowed to take risks. When you take a risk, it's a learning, not something that is to be avoided, right? This increases employee job satisfaction and commitment, obviously. And now, better communication, coordination, it becomes very informal. Frequent reviews and interactions between superiors and subordinates help to maintain harmonious relationships within the organizations and also solve many problems. When you and I are informal for too long, will we not develop trust? Will we not accept each other's pluses and minuses? That's what happens here. Clarity of goals, individual and organization. Subordinates tend to have a higher commitment to objectives they set for themselves than those imposed on them by other person. Managers can ensure that objectives of the subordinates are linked to the organization's objectives. And everybody has a common goal for whole organization. That means it's a directive principle of management. The goals set at the top do not get diluted when it reaches the bottom. There is no Chinese whispers. There is no wayward thing that happens because it's a one-to-one, one-to-one. It goes down the line through the scalar path. And when that happens, you find that the dissonance or the straying away from the main goal of the organization is kept to the minimum. Having said this, I want to add one more thing. MBO unfortunately has not succeeded in many organizations because at the top level, the policies, the trust factors, and the integrity has not been very high. It's like I buy you into some goal to be achieved. I gain your trust by being informal. and then I do not award you what I promised you when you achieve the goals. Now that can lead to betrayal, feelings of betrayal. Now this is something that needs to be properly checked. There are times when I promise something I cannot award you because of certain reasons. Am I being transparent with you? Am I being very clear with you? Or am I using it as a strategy to get work done? Only the executives, only the companies know the answer for this. Forecasting. Now I come to forecasting. In forecasting, what is it? It's a fundamental to planning. Forecasts are statements about the future, specifying the volume of sales to be achieved and the equipment, materials and other input needed to be realize the expected sales. So forecasting is all about something about the future. This is quite verbose. I'll take it further. A popular definition of forecasting is that it is estimating the future demand of products and services and the resources necessary to produce these outputs. One of the starting points of forecasting is the sales or the demand forecasting. Okay, because once I know how much of sales I'm going to achieve in the next 5 years, I can work backwards and know what sort of resources I need. Sales forecasts trigger almost all forecasts. What are the methods? As I told you earlier, forecasting has got two dimensions. Quantitative, it's about numbers. Numbers are easy to forecast because numbers are basically trends. A company sold 10,000 cars last month. Earlier to that, it sold maybe 20,000 cars. So this month, if you see the trend, linear trend, if it's true or false is secondary, it could be selling less than 10,000 cars. So some sort of a linear interpolation is possible when you have figures. So in quantitative, we use time series and measurable methods based on past data. Qualitative or judgmental methods are very tricky. Would people still buy, say, black cars? Would people still use Fair and Lovely? Now these are qualitative in nature, and qualitative is highly psychological as far as the consumer behavior is concerned. Numbers, when you do forecasting, you may not go very wrong, but in attributes, it's very, very tough. It's very challenging. Today, market research organizations are grappling with how to bring about qualitative forecasting. You know, so these involve executive committee consensus, experts with very good rich experience who have got the business intelligence. They come along and make some forecasting. To quite an appreciable extent, they may be right in what they see about the future, which others don't see. Qualitative aspects, right? Delphi method, it's a method wherein, you know, people are made to put in their suggestions anonymously, and then the best suggestion is taken and then read out, and then on a consensus basis, they'll say this method we need to adopt. This is what could be the predictable future. Survey of sales force and field expectation method, survey of customers methods and using expectation method, historical analogy, what happened in the past could happen in the future, a trend, and then market surveys. Okay. Now, friends, that brings us to the end of this involved session on planning, which I spoke about to you, and wish you all the best. Thank you very much.